It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, we'll look at a proposed change to utility rates here in Wisconsin and what that can mean for energy-conscious consumers.
First, we're continuing our week-long series, On the Rocks, a look at Wisconsin's alcohol culture. Every day at 5, we're examining a different side of the state's relationship with alcohol. Yesterday, we talked to a doctor about how alcohol affects the body.
Today, we're zeroing in on one Wisconsin county's solution to repeat drunk driving offenders, special alternative treatment programs. While drunk driving isn't the only problem caused by alcohol use and misuse, it's one of the most well-known consequences.
Michael Olig is with us. He's the coordinator of the Safe Streets Treatment Option Program for the Winnebago County Human Services Department. Mike, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me on the program.
Well, let's start by looking at this thing in context. Why are people in Wisconsin drinking and driving?
Well, I just want to say before we begin that I'd like to remember all the people who are suffering because of alcohol-related problems. I hope they experience some healing from those, and that my observations about impaired driving in Wisconsin don't represent those of my employers. I think the why people drink and drive, explicitly it states in our statutes that people should not drive under the influence of something that impairs their driving ability. Yet we provide many opportunities for on-premise consumption in Wisconsin. And it implies to people that this is something that they're all right to do. It's all right to do. And they're kind of not somewhat enticed or encouraged to go out and do it, from going to a bar to a restaurant or the many public and community events that serve alcohol as part of the event. It seems to draw a lot of people in. And they use it. And so it seems to be a conflicting message in my view.
So what you're saying is that society's really sending mixed messages when it comes to drinking and driving. On the one hand, you've got the law enforcement side and public health saying, you know, this endangers people and drivers.
Yes.
On the other hand, a lot of social almost encouragement of
yes.
drinking and then getting in your car, I guess.
I think that's what it appears to be. You know, the way I view it is Wisconsin doesn't seem to have a problem with impaired driving. They have a problem with people who are apprehended for impaired driving. And there's a tendency to scapegoat the individuals apprehended for it, and I think that's probably the tip of the iceberg. There wouldn't be as many venues serving alcohol if there wasn't a demand for consumption.
Now, I know this is something that isn't just theory to you. This is something that really hit home in your own family. Could you tell us how you got interested?
Sure. Back in 2007, my son attended a Dave Matthews concert, and we had talked about, you know, making sure that he doesn't drink excessively and drive, and that he was going to have some drinks early in the evening and then drive back to Oshkosh. And he did, but he didn't really calculate how much he drank. And on the drive back to Oshkosh, he got in an accident, fell asleep, and ran into a wall. He suffered a TBI. He was in the hospital at Frederick for 12 days and then did about 4 weeks rehabilitation at home. His BAC at the time of when they took it was 0.10. In his mind, he thought he was, you know, safe to drive, and, you know, he risked that. Some of the messages, you know, that people get is you can have two and drive, but it doesn't always take into consideration who's having the two, who's mixing the two, what size glass you're using. Is it a standard glass? Are you male or female? What's your weight? What's your gender? Many other factors that influence BAC levels. And so he tried to do the thing that's recommended, monitors alcohol use, wait what he thought was a long enough period, and then drive home. Unfortunately, he had an accident and injured himself and his girlfriend.
And as I understand it, that was part of the wake-up call to you, that you thought more deeply about this, and then he got another OWI.
Yes, he did. Unfortunately, when somebody has a TBI, they don't remember a lot after the injury. And 3 weeks later, or 3 weeks after he got his license back, he had lost it, I think, for about, 36 months or so. He went to a bar. He planned to stay overnight at his friend's, gave his keys to the bartender, and proceeded to have some cocktails. As the evening progressed, he thought it was boring, so he was able to convince a drinking bartender to give him his keys back, and once again, he risked driving home and was cited for another OWI.
And what did that say to you when this happened so closely together? I mean, I guess society looks at that and said, you know, that kid has some problems with alcohol. What did
right.
you see?
One thing is the social acceptability of impaired driving, meaning we wouldn't have places for on-premise consumption if it weren't socially acceptable. It's considered illegal, treated as being illegal, but most of the people who commit the offense aren't criminal. They've committed a criminal traffic offense, but they're not criminal. It's similar to speeding, though the, you know, speeding's illegal, but yet people do it. And about 31,000 people die annually in speed-related accidents. So I started thinking about what's going on here in the socialization process. You're born in a culture and raised in a culture where alcohol is sold in so many different venues for on-premise consumption, and the advertising, the media. You know, you have conflicting messages where a newspaper may run an ad about OWIs and the legislature should criminalize the first, and next to it is a happy hour ad. You know, so it's kind of like, okay, which way should we go with this? You know, and I think that much of the information is communicated or perceived subliminally. People don't really, they witness what's going on. Like, for instance, if I go out to eat, I'll watch people's consumption. And many people go and have two cocktails and they feel they're safe to drive, but they really don't know. And, you know, that's people who are going out there that they're probably over 0.08, but they don't realize it.
Now, a lot of people would look at this and say, I think I know who these people are. They're people who are alcoholics getting behind the wheel. But is there a typical profile for a drunk driver?
I have not seen it yet. I would, in the program that I run, we just went over 1,000 people. I would say 95% of the people I would trust riding with them, with my house, watching my house, family members, and so on. There are persons who, other than the offense of impaired driving, do not do anything criminal. So it's really hard to, you know, have a stereotype. There are people out there who are doing it intentionally and maliciously, but many people just, you know, will risk it. And given that we allow people to have up to 0.08 before they can be, you know, arrested for OWI, it impairs their decision-making, judgment, and insight. And so they don't really know if they're over the limit or not.
Now, Wisconsin is a state that has a well-known problem with drinking culture and with drunk driving. You're at the vanguard of a new program that's trying to turn it around. What is STOP?
STOP is the Safe Streets Treatment Options Program. It began on December 1st, 2006. It was decided by our Safe Streets Treatment Program Committee, which is a group of people in the community who gather to look at alternatives to incarceration. It's a program that offers an alternative to incarceration for second and third OWI offenders in Winnebago County who are residents of Winnebago County. The individuals can opt for the program on a one-time basis. And it tries to balance rehabilitation and a consequence for the behavior in an effort to enhance community safety and return the person back to society as a productive citizen.
So they get one chance to accept this program and go through it. What happens then once they take you up on it?
When they do, they will meet with me, and I'm an intoxicated driver program assessor in Wisconsin, meaning I'm able to do the assessment that the Department of Transportation requires for individuals charged with OWI. I do the assessment, and it yields a finding. From that finding, I make a recommendation. Some individuals are referred to an educational program at the technical colleges, which is called Multiple Offender Program. That's 30 hours of classroom instruction with a 90-day follow-up. And other individuals are referred to treatment for a substance abuse problem.
And before we go to news, tell us how it's doing so far.
Well, to date, we've had 716 people who've completed the program. We've had the recidivism rate for the last seven, three-quarter years is about 11%. That's the restate that. The rearrest rate, the recidivism rate, you can't really calculate that. I can only look on CCAP, which is the state website, to see if people committed other offenses. So it's been about 11%. And to date, we saved Winnebago County jail days saved is 26,000. 710. So it's delayed our having to add on to the jail or hire more personnel to manage this population who would have been in jail for the offense of second or third OWI.
We're talking right now with Mike Oleg of Winnebago County about alternative treatment options for multiple OWI offenders. It's the third installment of our week-long series, On the Rocks, a look at Wisconsin's alcohol culture. We're taking your calls next. Have you ever driven after drinking? Why did you think it was okay? Do you see some of those societal cues that it's something that is maybe acceptable in Wisconsin? Is drinking and driving a problem in your community? And how do you think Wisconsin should address drinking and driving? We're picking up our discussion now with Mike Oleg of the Winnebago County Human Services Department. He's talking about their alternative treatment program for multiple OWI offenders. It's called STOP. And we're taking your calls now. Have you ever gotten an OWI? And why did you at the time think that it was all right to drive after you'd been drinking? What do you think Wisconsin should do to decrease instances of OWI? And what solutions do you have? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Mike, we were talking about the program STOP in Winnebago County. That's the Safe Streets Treatment Option Program. And one thing that seems to distinguish it from other options out there is that there is this element of this personal relationship that you have with the person going through the program. How does that come into play?
Well, I meet with the individuals to do the assessment, and then I meet with them on a monthly basis, if not more frequently, based on their needs. And the relationship seems to have an effect on changing people's behavior. It's recognizing that this individual did commit this offense, but treating the individual with respect and a full expectation that they are going to return back to be a productive member of society and no longer commit the offense. One of the things about this program, it's not a traditional OWI court program where they have to appear before a judge weekly. Basically, the judges sentence the person to the program, and I manage and supervise the program for the course of the year. Should a problem arise with the individual where they're not compliant with the program, we try to remedy that problem. And if they still don't comply, then we just refer them back to court, and then the courts will make a decision whether or not to continue them in the program or revoke them from the program.
I want to go to our phone lines now. We're going to talk to Jan first in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Jan.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, you're coming through fine.
All right, I'm on the road. I'm 54 right now, but when I was in my 20s, I did get picked up for what they called DWI at that time. And, you know, at that age, and I'm not so certain that things have changed, what we basically, I mean, my entire group of friends would drink and drive. It was just totally accepted. We would buzz over to Superior. Oftentimes, if we went out in Duluth, then we'd buzz over to Superior for bar closing because they were open an hour or two later. And we actually got picked up because, we were with the one of the guys that was in the band at this particular bar, and he and his friends were sending my girlfriend and I over drinks all night. And even though my home was only about 5 miles away, I was going too slow. I was going 40 in a 55, and so I got picked up. And, you know, at that time, I knew the ramifications of driving drunk. The counseling and the classes that I went to afterwards did me absolutely no good whatsoever. I mean, I was just sitting through it, and it was going in one ear out the other because I wasn't learning anything new. But when you're in your 20s and you're out and you're trying to meet guys and that's what's on your mind, you know, there's hormones going on and you just want to meet guys and you want to be comfortable in that bar setting, you grab your drink. And, you know, if you try and go through one night out there and you want to stay perfectly sober and not have a drink, it does ruin it for you if you're used to going out and having fun.
I want to ask you, did it change things for you? You said the counseling was worthless, but did the experience overall and going through it change the way you related to drinking and driving later on?
Well, I suppose to a point it did. I have to say, honestly, I just thank God that I'm married right now, and my husband and I don't do socializing like that. We don't go out to the bars. I'm afraid that if I was still single and I was trying to meet guys and I was going out, I probably would still be doing it. You know, it's different than like saying you can kill someone by texting while you drive, because texting is something that I absolutely don't have to do. I can pull over. I can stop. I don't have any need to text. But when I'm out and I'm trying to meet somebody and I feel like I need that social crutch of that drink, it's very different.
Right. Gotcha. So much. Thank you so much for that call, Jan. And what do you think about that perspective, Mike? She went through the counseling 30 mm-hmm. years ago. She said right. it was worthless.
I think we most of us live with an illusion of invulnerability. It won't happen to me. So we risk certain behaviors. And then often what she's saying, it won't happen to me again if I persist in the behavior. And that's unfortunate, but it seems to be part of human nature. Maturity is a big part of this. Many of the people, I can also say, I have an OWI when I was 20 in the military. I stopped the behavior probably several years later just because I became more invested in my life and I became more socially responsible and conscious about the effects of my behavior of other people. But, you know, that's a big part of it. You know, one of the things she also mentioned is males are much more risk averse. About 75% of the people who are in this program are males, and many of them are younger males who will take more risk. And that's evidenced by I deal with many more males in the program.
All right. Well, I want to thank Jan for her call. And we're going to move next to Jen in Oak Creek. Hi, Jen.
Hello. I was listening to the program, and one of the things that I've noticed, at least about Milwaukee, is the lack of transportation options. I recall one time in college we were down at Water Street. We called a taxi, waited for 2 hours. Luckily, we were at Marquette, so we just walked home. But, you know, bigger cities have subways, L trains, buses, taxis. So there's so many more options. I feel like sometimes people, you know, who want to drink like Jan, you don't have an option to get home, especially in some of those rural areas.
Right. Thanks a lot, Jen. This is something that's come up before. We've talked about this on the show, lack of public transportation options. And, you know, not just in Milwaukee, in other areas of Wisconsin and in other cities, people say this kind of thing. Is that part of it, Mike?
Yes, it is part of it. You know, people do want to socialize. And how are they going to get to where they're going to socialize? And that is a big part of it. So they'll risk. One of the things is in Oshkosh, we don't have a lot of opportunities for cabs. Either. People will wait 1 to 2 hours. They've been drinking. They might feel, well, I'm not going to wait that long. I want to get home and I want to sleep. And then they might jump in the car and risk. Some of the other problems is the parking policy in some communities where people don't leave their vehicle because it'll get ticketed. I had a friend of mine whose vehicle was towed in the winter, just left it at the bar, but it was towed and it was a $175 fine because they were going to plow. And, you know, so things like that. And you can see where that can influence your thinking, and because you've been drinking, your decision making and willingness to take a risk is enhanced.
All right, let's go to one more quick call here, and we're going to take Kevin in Duluth. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. What do you think?
Well, I obviously do not agree with drinking and driving. Obviously, it's something that I've done many, many times. I'm actually a four-time DUI survivor. And it wasn't until I was married and I had my fourth one in 2000 where the ramifications for that were outrageous, because I'm not a rageous fat, but they needed to be that way. But for me at that time, I was like, oh, my gosh, you've got to be kidding me that I've got to go through all this to get my license back. It's like a year and a half without any even consideration.
Right, when you got kids, that's a big change you're going through there. Kevin had a wake-up call. For him, it was having four kids. And thank you so much for that call, Kevin. Mike, do you think that's something that people need to have, sort of a personal moment of revelation when it comes to their drinking and driving?
I think that can help them, but also somebody that can walk them through it and explain to them, listen, we understand, you know, you did this behavior. We want for you to stop that behavior. And many people, you know, they're willing to risk their freedom, their life, other people's life or freedom to get home. You know, drinking and driving is kind of like an all-in in Texas Hold'em. You're putting it all on the table every time you risk drinking or driving while impaired.
And Mike, in our last moments here, is Stop the Way Forward programs like this community-based solutions?
I think it is, because, you know, we started addressing this issue in 1980 seriously when Candy Leitner began MAD. There have been 2,800 laws passed since 1980, and we're still talking about the issue. And there aren't enough social pressures right now by the citizens to say, let's take care of each other. Yeah, we want to drink, but let's figure out how we can get each other home safely.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
We've been talking to Mike Oleg, coordinator of the Safe Streets Treatment Option Program for the Winnebago County Human Services Department. He was with us for the third installment of our series On the Rocks, a look at Wisconsin's alcohol culture.